¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne Match Day. My name's Taylor Payne and it's the penultimate home game of the season. As Newcastle United are back in Premier League action against Brighton at St James's Park and they're absolutely desperate for a result. Chris and George are on the ground for this one, but first, here's some action.
Gimaresh towards Murphy. Verbruggen is out of his area, slipping as Murphy finds Osuna! Joy at last for Newcastle United! And comes again from Gimaresh towards Byrne! Dan Byrne doubles Newcastle's lead! Oh, Pope! It's hit the post! Well, that would have been a real mess. Nick Pope gets away with it. Oh, chance again, and Chow is denied by Verbruggen. Might get a second bite at it. Brighton all over the place defensively at times in this first half. It's Welbeck towards Hinshelwood. It's Hinshelwood!
It's a brilliant goal because the one-touch football is very difficult to defend against.
And the old loose cross. Gross, it hits Chow. It's an overhead kick that is brilliantly saved by Pope. Jorginho Ruta towards Van Hecke. Minter has blazed over the most glorious of opportunities to equalise. Lewis Hall for Wissa. And still he can't score a Premier League goal in 2026. And Jo Linton couldn't quite nestle one in the bottom corner. Van Hecke couldn't go back to his goalkeeper. It's Johan Wissa. Barnes! The pain ends for Newcastle United. Harvey Barnes emphatically completes their victory.
Well, what is this strange feeling I have, Chris?
What was all the fuss about? What's all the fuss been about the last few weeks?
Well, the fuss has been about Newcastle United not being very good at football. I think that is fair enough. I find that a challenging question to answer because it felt like there was quite a lot of fuss in that match. But anyway,
the second half was excruciating.
Can we go back to my original question? What is this very strange feeling I'm experiencing at the moment?
Old age, or
Could be that. Yeah, could be that. Well, no, it's the winning feeling. That's winning the point feeling. I'm trying to say. What a relief that is. That's the first feeling, isn't it, really? Just relief.
Yeah, that's what Howe said, and that's what I think everyone, it felt like everyone exhaled.
Yeah.
Particularly when the Harvey Barnes goal went in, Howe in his press conference after basically said that was a nice moment because it's one of the rare moments within a match where the match isn't finished, but you know the match is over.
Yeah.
Because they'd scored so late into added time. And yeah, I think then it was, you could just feel the anxiety lift around the ground because there had been a lot of that at several occasions, but particularly during what felt like the longest second half that there has ever been in football.
Yes, we have to talk about the second half. Yeah, a half of football, which I think Newcastle United wiped their feet on the way out. I think you would say that. But yes, it's Newcastle United 3, it's Brighton and Hove Albion 1. It's a victory, something that we haven't felt for a long time. Certainly that's how it feels to me, just like a big moment, a big little moment. It's a victory that takes Newcastle up to what, 13th in the table?
Lofty heights of.
Yeah, so like in those terms, when you're talking about some of the kind of big wins we have seen here over the last two or three seasons, it doesn't compare to that. But just in terms of just having to find a way of getting 3 points, having to just stop the rot. In fact, that's a phrase that Dan Byrne used when I spoke to him afterwards. You've played in huge, huge victories. You've won a cup. You've won Champions League matches, big nights. This feels like a very big game, but in different circumstances. Would you agree?
So. Yeah, definitely. I think from experience, when I've been going through tough times at other teams, it's like, I'd said this, and I don't know if there's a better phrase, but you need to sort of stop the rot a little bit. Yeah. And you just need to sort of put an end to what's been going on and get a result no matter what happens. And yeah, it probably wasn't the prettiest performance that we had, but it was nice to know that. A lot's been spoken about the amount of points we've given up and winning positions this season, so to say it out psychologically, I think it's huge for.
Yeah, I mean, what I've asked you before, like, about what it's like being in a team when you're winning every week. Mm. What's it like being in a team when you're not winning every week? Does it almost become like a self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes, psychologically? Or?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's different. I don't see a lot of the outside noise. I think that's a good thing with the staff that we have. It's sort of like whether we're winning or losing, not a lot changes. It's like the same sort of process, and I think that brings like a calmness to it. Obviously, like, it's only natural, like, we want to be higher up, and we've been on such an upward trajectory the last few years that when it's not going like that, you can understand the frustration coming from whoever's upset. But for us, I think it's a big learning season for us. I said it, I think we struggled mentally, like, attacking all four fronts the way that we did. This isn't speaking for the club, this is speaking for me personally. I think it was tough going into games when you were just recovering and going again and recovering and going again and not having that sort of time out on the training pitch, which I feel like the top teams are really good at, just constantly hitting that same mark every game. So something that we can learn from going forward.
I thought that was interesting, you know, hearing him talk about that, him personally being struggling mentally to deal with four competitions, which obviously Newcastle were in for a very, very long time, and the response to it. It is new to the club, and new to this team, and new to Eddie Howe, and obviously with the lack of training time. I know that's not a kind of brand new observation, but it was interesting him be so honest about that. And it has felt like a very flat, fatigued team since they went out of the Champions League. They just had to win this match, didn't they? By hook or by crook, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, they had to, and I just think that it would have felt fully end of days if Newcastle hadn't, if they'd lost in particular, and particularly when they'd been 2-0 up, and in the second half, if Brighton had taken one of the chances midway through, then I think Newcastle probably would have crumbled at that stage, and I think there would have only been one winner in that. And in that case, it would have been difficult to argue that this wasn't only going one way, that the momentum was sliding against them. So it just feels huge for everyone. Howe talked afterwards about, at the time it didn't feel like this necessarily, but afterwards there probably is a positive from Newcastle having been pushed so far, and that basically if they were to end a rot like this, they were probably gonna, it was probably gonna be a tight game, and that you will gain and grow from this. Now, it's easy to say that now. We'll see how they respond again against Forest next week.
I'd have liked the opportunity to gain and grow from a 4-0 home victory.
Well, quite, yeah, exactly. That would be wonderful.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit. But I know what you're saying. Yes, I know what you're saying. They've had to sort of stare down adversity, quite a lot of it self-inflicted adversity, you would have to say. If only Nick Pope could kick the ball straight. But yeah, they got through it. And of course, the context here is everything. It's not just beating Brighton at home. It's doing it after a run of 9 Premier League defeats from 12. It's doing it in front of PIF, the club's ownership, who obviously have been at Chatfin Hall for the previous two or three days.
They've been to Chatfin Hall this week.
They've been to Chatfin Hall, to Chatfin Hall.
Doesn't seem like
there's been a lot of
coverage of that.
No, so they have, and you know, they got to see Newcastle win, albeit, you know, not in easy circumstances, but they did get to see a lot of fight, and they did see, you know, they did get to see a team with a plan. They got to see a team that started well, and they saw a team, you know, that you can argue is still fighting for their manager. They heard support for Eddie Howe in the ground. And so what you would like to think this does is take the pressure off everybody a little bit, just that horrible, heavy pressure where you can sort of feel it in the air. I'm not saying it should mean there's no pressure to win more games, because there are, but at least it hopefully can change the story a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, Newcastle lost 5 of the last 6 league games here as well.
Yeah.
So that in itself is just huge. It felt like at St. James's they just can't. I mean, so that beyond the Man United game, they hadn't won here since Palace in January. That's also the last time they'd won a Premier League game by 2 clear goals. Now, look, for a long stage, like, they weren't going to even do that with Brighton until Barnes gets the third. But that's massive, and that's where Newcastle, have the previous 10 matches in the Premier League for Newcastle had been decided by a 1-goal margin either way, which was, there's only been 3 other times in the territory of top flight football that that's happened. Newcastle were on the wrong end of 7 of those and had won 3 of them. Tight games they were not good at. They've not been good at being 1-0 up, but they've found a way. And I mean, let's go to the team selection, because I'm not going to try and rewrite history. I'm not going to try and say that I saw the team and I was alarmed, because the main part of my alarm was I went back to the Arsenal game, and the front three that start today is the same front three that started against Arsenal, and beyond Willisula with essentially an air shot in the first minute, none of the three of them at any stage looked like scoring. Willock curls a shot, he shot straight at Raya. And my thought was, this is a game Newcastle have to win, and I have no confidence that front three are going to score a goal.
It was fascinating. I'm not going to go on to the other place, but when you posted your team selection onto Blue Sky, here's a bit of a selection. It'll be okay, it'll be okay, it'll be okay, it's not okay. And here's another one. Jesus fucking Christ. I talked myself all week into backing Howe again. Then the football starts and you just don't see how he continue. This was before the football started. Someone else said, Alanga for Murphy at 67 and Ramsey for Willock a minute later. That may have actually happened. Someone else, not sure if I've been to Bromley, but we'll probably go next year if they go down. That team is shite. So, I mean, I know that's all par for the course. On you know, whenever a team is selected with who everybody is in it. But I did think that was a bit different. So I was at Arsenal and I didn't think Newcastle were bad at all. They were a lot better. I felt a big sense of deflation afterwards because I thought Arsenal were actually there for the taking. And just that whole thing of taking positives from a defeat, I'm just, you know, in my Newcastle United supporting existence, I'm just really sick of that. But if you're the manager, you saw something to build on. I said in the pod in midweek, I'd be really interested to see what he did. And if there was actually, after all those team changes, there was a bit of continuity. And indeed there was. So Gillington comes in. It's back to, you know, nominally, theoretically, Newcastle's strongest midfield. But that was the only change. And look, I mean, I totally understand what you say about that front three. But the front three were really good in the first half.
But before we come on to how it actually played out, the rest of the team, if you look at it as well, he's brought in a lot of experience in certain ways. We've talked about this last week as well, but it was also, he kept burning at left back, which didn't go down well. People wanted Lewis Hall in the side, understandably, to a degree at home. That midfield three, as you mentioned, Newcastle's record, they probably haven't performed to the heights collectively that you would like, but Newcastle's record with those three is substantially better when they play as to when they don't play together, which they haven't played together since January in the Premier League or started together in the Premier League. He keeps Murphy in the team, and I think a lot of this is, and Willock's players to a degree, are these players who he turns to because of the pressure and the occasion, as you mentioned, that this was going to be a highly pressurised environment, and at the minute, can you put someone like Anthony Elanga into that environment to start a match, given the way the crowd's reacted maybe to him in recent weeks, and given his clear lack of confidence in a few of the other players? And I think that contributed to some of that team selection to a certain degree. But the front three, Willock hasn't scored a Premier League goal this season, Asula had 4 in the league before today, and Murphy had 3. So it wasn't like he was putting out a prolific lineup. I mean, my argument before the game would have been, I'd have played Harvey Barnes, because he's got a goal in him now. He comes on and scores, but actually he was awful once he came on and scored. The game environment had changed, but Howe puts his faith in that team, he's seen it and trained, talked about it afterwards. It was quite a boring, long answer, really technical answer about he's that I have to see. Supporters don't get to see it, but I reward what I see in training. I have to believe in what I see in training, and that's why he selected the team that he did.
It's quite, if I could use modern parlance, it was quite a trolling kind of team, wasn't it? It's like, you've got to play Walter Mari, you've got to do this, you've got to. And then up front, you've got Jacob Murphy, who was here pre-takeover, you've got Joe Willock, who was here pre-takeover, you've got Willisula, okay, slightly different case, but like 22-year-old project player. That's being generous to call someone who's 22 a project player, but is keeping out, you know, is keeping out the big money signings from the summer. I mean, you worked out the approximate cost of that bench. It was what?
335 million.
Astonishing.
And this is in front of the ownership as well.
Yeah, and this is in front of the ownership. They've spent all that money. So you can make an argument that that substitutes bench is a story of failure. I mean, I know, okay, you know, Anthony Gordon is coming back from injury, etc. But, like, that is a story of failure. But at the same time, he is picking a team to win a match, and he's put the faith in the players, and they've gone out and delivered. And there was an uptick at Arsenal, and more or less the same team has delivered. That is what a football, you know, people constantly accuse Eddie Howe of only picking his favourites or, you know, being too loyal or whatever. But actually, it's his job. You know, it shows that there's a form of democracy there. He hasn't gone for names. He's not gone for money. He's picked a team that he thinks will get a result, and they got a result.
It's like live or die by the sword. I mean, this is not a fair comparison because I'm not trying to compare Steve McLaren with Eddie Howe. But in McLaren's last game, actually against Howe's Bournemouth, he just changes everything and he plays Riviere at front. It's a bit of a batshit. Just throw everything and see if it sticks. Howe, as you say, could have almost responded to a lot of the noise out there and said, well, he has Voldemort and Wissa then. That's what you want. That's what it seems that at least a certain section of the crowd want. But he hasn't. He's stuck to his guns. And it was almost like, well, this is what I believe in. And if it goes wrong, then I'm going to go wrong doing what I believe in.
Yeah. And again, in fairness, he's like, says his process is, yes, you've got the game. You've got the previous game. So it's like Arsenal did okay. And then it's all about training. So there are always coded messages in what managers say. And he says, like, training is a huge part of what he bases his team selection on. And so the point he's making is that if we want to call them the old guard have delivered in training during the week. They're the ones that have impressed. They're the ones who've said, okay, I'm in the team now. I want to stay there. And so he's rewarded that. And, you know, as he said, other people don't get to see that, but I do. And you can't argue, you know, when Newcastle win, you can't argue with it.
And before we get on to the positive of the first half, let's go on to the first 80 seconds when Newcastle probably should have been 1-0 down. And this is the brilliance of Pope. This is what he can do. So the game starts, and I'll actually turn to my colleague Anath, who was up covering for Brighton, and I said, I was asking how Brighton played, and he said, oh, Hinshelwood will play as a 10. I said, oh, Hinshelwood will have a lot of space. And then Hinshelwood coasts into the area. It's just nobody tracks him, and he has this shot inside 80 seconds, which Nick Pope manages to save down to his left, which was huge. And you could feel the anxiety in Newcastle. The stadium felt anxious. Newcastle looked like an anxious team early on, which was entirely understandable because it did just feel like there was that sort of pressure hanging over the stadium.
Totally. I mean, everybody knew how big it was, you know. And like the last games have ended up with Newcastle losing, obviously, but and the crowd booing, and so there's just that heaviness and nervousness everywhere. Everyone knows how important it is, and you know, you and I were kind of watching the possession stats tick over 5 minutes. It was 75 or so percent to Brighton, 10 minutes, 75% to Brighton. And you're thinking, this could be a long afternoon. But I mean,
Hertzler said the Brighton were dominant.
Well,
that's how he described it.
There were, you know, those early moments were a bit concerning, but I mean, he is wrong, I would say. And yeah, I would actually say that if we're talking about a slightly old school team selection, then it was also slightly old school Newcastle tactics. They were okay with Brighton having the ball, and when they were at their best was counter-attacking, which they did with great speed, and they were, you know, they pressed. Again, this season we've seen a team that's not been capable of pressing, or it's just kind of not worked. They don't have the personnel to do it, but that front three pressed really well. And you know, again, the really important thing, there was a partnership amongst those front three players. You thought that they were working in tandem, And you know, Brighton having the ball suits Newcastle.
It was pace and transition. I thought Brighton, I said this, Brighton was slow to move the ball in the first half, whereas Newcastle, everything they did was quick. It was borderline chaotic, but in a way that sort of worked. I mean, that's what Asula brings. He kept trying to do that dummy where he'd let the ball roll through, or he'd flick it through to Willock, and then there was gaps in behind Brighton's back line. And that's what served Newcastle well. I mean, he within the seventh minute, he turned down the right, got on the right-hand side of the box, did really well on the touchline, and Belieber came across and made a good tackle. But at the other end, Belieber goes and curls a shot, dips onto the crossbar. But it did feel like, that, as you say, the front three did start well. And was it a three? We were trying to debate early on where exactly everyone was playing, and there was times where Joel Linton was wider and it looked off the ball like it was almost a 4-4-2 where Willock just off Asula and Joel Linton would go out wide left, but actually on the ball it was probably more of a sort of a 4-3-3. And the opening goal comes after 12 minutes, and I didn't quite appreciate at the time that it had started all the way from Nick Pope, because of what eventually comes to pass, which is a goalkeeping error at the other end. But Pope has the ball. He looks like he's going to go to the right and eventually plays down to the left. The ball goes down the left wing. Eventually it comes to Bruno Guimaraes in the middle of the pitch, and Brighton try to press him, and he switches play to the right-hand side, big space in behind Jacob Murphy. Brilliant ball. Jacob Murphy running behind Bart Verbruggen, a goalkeeper Newcastle-like, and are looking at potentially for the summer, just has a complete head loss, almost very, very similar to Nick Pope from previous week against Arsenal, where he just rushes out and tries to get to the ball, a ball he's probably never going to get to. He almost seems to hesitate himself, because I think he realises about 5 yards away from the ball, I'm probably not getting here. He slips. And then does he catch Murphy? I think he might slightly catch him. But anyway, Murphy does go down, whether it's anticipating the contact or not, but immediately gets back up to his feet.
I'd kind of stopped watching, because it was like, well, that's a foul. It's like I sort of turned to you and I thought it was just going to get blown up for a foul, and you know, you just have to give Jacob Murphy huge credit at that moment, because there must have been a temptation to claim something there, but he gets straight back on his feet and delivers just a brilliant ball.
Well, that's what I'm more pressing. It's not even the getting back to his feet, it's the fact that he can get back to his feet immediately and get the ball in the box. And this is part of the reason why, when I was talking about the team before the game, one of my arguments was the only point in having Jacob Murphy in the side is if he's got someone to cross to, and I don't think there's been enough recently where he has someone to cross to, but in that moment he's exactly who you want there to cross the ball, and Asula gets into the position, it's an open goal, but Asula heads it in, and that is huge. That is exactly what those two are on the side for, and it's exactly what Newcastle needed.
It was brilliant. And then, you know, it was a great finish, it was a great header, and then a couple of minutes later Murphy had kind of was got entangled with the Brighton player, and he ended up walking back onto the pitch with sort of half a cone over his boot, and then claiming innocence when the referee pointed and told him to get it off, and he puts on his head. It's like, this is just like the old days. It's like Murphy's he's banged in a cross, Newcastle are pressing, and you know, then he's doing some prime shit housing. It's like, yeah, okay, good, Newcastle are back.
Yeah, and it that sort of lifted everyone, and it was, it felt like a big moment. In the 20th minute, it was the first time when we heard that Eddie Howe's Black and White Army. That wasn't the entire ground, that was just sort of part of it. And there's then a very quick counter-attack where Pope kicks the ball forward, Asula like dummy flicks the ball onwards, and Willock sprinted in down the left, cross low, and Belieber's put out for a corner. And you could see Tindall and Howe almost like on the touchline, visibly encouraging Newcastle. This is what we want you to attack quickly. And it was from that led to two corners in a row. First of all, the first one is a really good delivery from Bruno Guimaraes to the front post, which Verbruggen punches off his own defender, and it goes out for a second corner, from which Bruno swings it in slightly further into the box, and Byrne runs from the back post, loses his man, and heads in. And that's huge, because Newcastle, I hear a lot about how Newcastle are rubbish from set pieces, and actually the statistics say otherwise for expected goals. We're going to come back to this. Expected goals-wise, Newcastle actually have the highest XG4 from set pieces. Before this game, they had this in the Premier League this season. They are creating chances from them. They just don't take them often enough. And for the height that they have, Howe spoke afterwards about that's part of the reason you want to burn the team, to have height for those specific situations, because Brighton don't have that much height. And that ultimately didn't win them the game in the end, but it's what gave them that second goal buffer, which was huge.
Which was massive, because, you know, when the first goal goes in, I turned to you and said, oh, shit.
You did,
I mean, I was joking, but I also wasn't joking. And absolutely desperately needed that second goal, and desperately needed it to stay, with a nil next to Brighton's name at half time. I just thought that was so important. But yeah, no, I mean, and you know, it's one thing you don't sort of talk about enough. Maybe when Bruno comes out of the team, his corners have been really good, and they cause, you know, that those, in the same way that kind of long throws have been a thing in the Premier League this season, those kind of corners that go directly into the 6-yard box cause problems for teams.
And I asked how about the importance of the second goal, even given the nervousness of the second half, just how big a moment it was to actually have that sort of 2-goal lead, and this is what he said.
The second goal was a big moment in the game. Now, we knew the game wasn't over, far from it, but we haven't done that enough, and we've had opportunities too, we just haven't been clinical. Today, Will obviously takes his header well, Dan takes the corner well, and that was another big part of talking about team selection, getting more height in the team, becoming better from set plays at both ends. That's something we haven't been good in this run. So I know people will look at the team and make their assessments on it. We have to try and take a balanced look, and all these things like height in the back line, height in from set plays play a big part in results. So I was pleased when Dan scored that header.
And yeah, so that goal actually came in the 24th minute, and it should have been 2-1 just 3 minutes later. We had goalkeeping errors at both ends throughout the game, and when I talked about the magnificence of Nick Pope earlier on, I will talk about the magnificence of the shot stopping a bit later on as well. But Malik Chow passes the ball back to Pope from a sort of right back position, and Pope takes an age to try and clear the ball. It wasn't the best back pass, but it wasn't the worst one either, and Pope just takes an age, and Hinshelwood runs in, closes him down and blocks it, and it ricochets onto the inside of the right hand post, somehow manages to not cross the line and then bounce out. But it just felt like Newcastle were again trying to shoot themselves in the foot, as they have done so many times.
Yeah, inviting pressure on themselves, not for the first time. And that is, it's the weird thing about Pope, where you can still see when, as you say, you know, like he's made a couple of absolutely vital saves in this match, and the speed with which he gets to the ball is just incredible. It's like that reactive thing. It's that instinct. And when the ball comes to his feet, it's absolutely the opposite. You can almost see him thinking. I mean, I don't know how else to describe that. You can see his thought process. And it's a bit like
just shit, 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 shit.
Well, it's like, it's so slow. It's so slow for him to get the ball away. And he'll try and give himself a touch, and it slows everything down further. And it's almost then becomes like slow motion watching it. It's awful. And, you know, I don't want to sort of usher anybody out of the door at Newcastle, you know, from this team, but it causes them problems, because it throws them under pressure, or it concedes them possession. But yeah, and you know, again, it feeds into that story about the goalkeeping department being such a difficult one for Newcastle this season. So yeah, they needed his hands, but my God, they didn't want his feet.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's just should have been 3-0 really. That from a set piece, Tonali, the ball passes inside Tonali, crosses to Botman at the back post, who heads it back across, and Chow meets it with his foot, and Verbruggen actually makes a wonderful reaction save. He just sticks his foot out, and then Botman puts it over, and it was 35 minutes, Newcastle only had 32% possession. It was about being quick with the ball, moving it forward. And there was another moment for Asula in added time at the end of the first half, where he did brilliantly down the right, great dummy, and he gets the edge of the box and then sort of lashes wildly wide. That's sort of, you saw the best and worst of him in that very, very same movement. And so at half time, it's 2-0, deserved half time lead, and the front three, it had worked. And you sort of felt at that point, right, on Newcastle in a strong position here. You thought Brighton would probably come out strong, and Brighton actually came out 90 seconds to 2 minutes before Newcastle for the second half. And they just felt more ready for the second. I mean, we know Newcastle struggle or have across the course of this season when the game restarts. And almost from the restart, it felt like the momentum was shifting and that the ball was getting dragged towards the Gallagher end because Newcastle had been turned around, so they were actually attacking towards the Leeds in the second half.
Yeah, the first little section of the second half was very, very nervy. Brighton were a lot better. And again, you can just see a team like, you know, that Newcastle have been that just don't have confidence, or they don't have confidence to fall back on. You know, it's mentality. It's like, we've not been in this position for a long time. You can sort of just see them second guessing each other themselves, and it becomes very difficult. You know, and Brighton are a team that have been in absolutely brilliant form coming into this match, and Newcastle put three goals beyond them, you know, so fair play. But, you know, you can just sort of see that difference. And you're like, we're sitting in the press box. Everybody in the stadium is feeling the same thing from a Newcastle perspective. It's like, we know what happens. We've seen this before. You don't want to think it. You don't want to say that out loud, but we've all got it. You know, we've seen this movie before, and it just, it like infects, it's like an infection. It gets into everybody. And so, yeah, I mean, the first 10-15 minutes were not fun. But, I mean, there was more of that to come.
I mean, yeah, it felt momentum was turning, and the goal actually comes in just after the hour mark. The Brighton pull one back, and it's Pope an issue with trying to clear the ball. He just sort of almost lofts the ball straight up into the air, straight back to Brighton. And again, it wasn't just him, though. Newcastle were conceding possession in silly positions. Brighton work it brilliantly. I mean, the goal itself, from a Brighton perspective, the pass and move is just superb. The touches that they have, and Hinshaw would just blasts beyond Pope, and at that stage you just suddenly thought, all right, here we go. There's still basically half an hour to go, and it felt like a long half an hour. It was a very long half an hour.
It was absolutely one of the classic that has been coming goals, wasn't it? I mean, it just was. I mean, that something that happened 2 minutes before, we kind of touched on this a bit earlier, but it felt like the whole stadium was singing Eddie Howe's name. So there'd been a lot of that, pockets of stuff coming from the Gallagher and then elsewhere. But it kind of went all the way around the stadium. I think that was the crowd, you know, attempting to G the team up, hoping that they'd, you know, got over the hump of the start of the second half. They hadn't, as it turned up. But I felt that was a significant moment. I you can read too much into these things, but the ownership were there, and it was the whole stadium, or a large percentage of the stadium, and I just thought emotionally that felt like a moment.
Yeah, I didn't quite agree as much. I did feel like a moment, but I didn't feel, maybe it was just because I was caught up in the game and in the situation that it was. I didn't feel it was quite as powerful as necessarily you or and seemingly others in the press box did, and maybe I'm in the minority there. I thought it was a show of defiance to a certain degree, but it didn't feel to me like it was sort of all out guttural sort of feel of backing behind the manager. That's just my view on how I felt right at that moment, but that I may be wrong. I may have just been too absorbed in the game. I didn't quite feel.
That's fair. That's fair enough. I mean, I you know, you can draw too much from these things, or maybe not enough sometimes. But yeah, I thought in the circumstances, with everybody here, with the kind of results Newcastle have had, I just thought it was a kind of nice moment, and it was definitely something that I thought it was worth writing down and kind of reporting, because I think if Newcastle had gone behind in this match, or, you know, lost this match, we would be doing the same thing the other way. And so, you know, and that's sadly that's kind of what the club has felt like. It's felt like every sort of defeat then becomes a referendum on the manager. And so I think it's right to kind of point it out, you know, point it out the other way.
No, I don't disagree on that point. But then the Newcastle do concede that goal, and immediately Howe looks to make a change, which is probably one of the criticisms people have of him. Again, he reacts to when the situation's already gone against him. And it took Newcastle ages to get the players they wanted on the pitch because the passages of play lasted a long time and Brighton were having chances. Matoma killed a shot from the right-hand side of the box, which Chow had to put over. Triple sub comes on and Newcastle change to a back five. Willock, Murphy and Asula go off. Hall, Barnes and Wissa come on. Miley and Hall become wing backs. And it felt like Newcastle were trying to prevent Brighton being able to attack down too many wings, because at half time, Hertzlads flicked it around, and so that Minta was now on the left wing and Matoma was on the right, and Brighton were causing all sorts of problems. And I think, to a degree, as negative move as it was in some ways, I think defensively it worked for Newcastle to a large degree. Brighton still had opportunities. Newcastle was still under pressure. Offensively, beyond the fact that the Barnes scores in the end, I didn't think that there were great moves from an offensive perspective. But I think defensively it did help them a bit.
They needed energy, and I mean, I think that...
Yeah, they looked spent.
That would be my criticism, you know, pretty much from the start of the second half. It's like, okay, they're, you know, some of them are dead on their feet here. Obviously, Bruno's not played a lot of football. It sort of felt like they were clinging on, that he just needed some energy. And I think they got some energy. Again, I don't mind going to three at the back. I thought that was, you know, that sort of an attempt to solidify things at that moment didn't feel like a bad idea, but it was just such a topsy-turvy, chaotic second half that kind of a lot of patterns just sort of went out the window, it felt to me.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton put a lot of balls in the box, had a lot of opportunities in and around Newcastle's area. The closest they really came to scoring was when, in the 86th minute, Gross has a shot which it hits Chow's arm, but it's goal bound, but it was close proximity, and it was his arm wasn't outstretched. But then the ball goes to Kostoulas, who with an overhead kick, his shot is going into the bottom left hand corner, and Pope manages to get down and block it away. He'd made a similar save earlier on from one which had actually turned out would have been offside, but he didn't know it at the time from Matoma. And that's, again, what, as we say, that's where Pope is so strong, because there'd been the opposite where a few minutes before, Kostoulas had actually rushed in on Pope, who'd taken an extra touch, and his clearance had been blocked, not quite in the same way as Hinshaw would, but it felt like a sort of similar moment. And it was, again, you've got the brilliance in one side from a shot stopping, and then the heart in the mouth moment.
Yeah, it was a magnificent save. You have to give him huge credit for it. You know, they needed to step up in that moment. I mean, and they did, and they showed great fight. There was a lot of kind of defensive clearances. It was like awful to watch. It was horrible to watch. There was then that chance that fell to Yankuba Minta not long after that, and he absolutely he absolutely got his finish all wrong. But of course, Newcastle were doing the same thing at the other end as well. They just couldn't put the game to bed when they got those chances. It was really, really tough to sit through that second half.
It was, and then, I mean, Wissa has a couple of opportunities, one of which he puts over the bar from across from the left from Lewis Hall, had done brilliantly. And then he has another one in the build-up to Barnes' goal, which he nearly sort of cocks up. But he looked like he had more energy, he stretched the defence more, but that finishing touch still wasn't there, but Barnes puts the game to bed with that third goal, and it felt massive. You could see the relief sort of on the touchline. One thing I wanted to touch upon, which had happened at the end of the game, and there had been needles throughout most of it. Hertzler himself is quite it gets quite animated and
chirpy. Always in the fourth official's ear.
Yeah, and Newcastle have someone similar on their coaching
staff. Do they?
He's quite a reserved character, is Jason Tindall. But the two of them had been arguing during added time in particular. Then at the end of the match, it seemed like Hertzler refused to shake the hand of Jason Tindall, and the two of them walked on the pitch together, and I think Veltman ran onto the pitch as well, the Brighton player, to sort of separate them.
On the exchange with Jason Tindall, did you refuse to shake his hand afterwards? What happened after the beginning of the game?
No, I didn't refuse it. I had a shake hand with the head coach, and I think I showed a lot of respect for Eddie Howe, because I think he's doing a great job here, and like for such a long time. Huge respect for him, what he's doing to
NXT. Basically, without naming Jason,
I didn't refuse to shake his hand, but at the same time, I didn't shake his hand.
Yeah, so basically, by not naming Jason Tindall, that was basically a sort of...
Funnily enough, I was speaking to somebody else who works for Brighton afterwards, and he was talking about like bloody Joe Linton. It was like Joe Linton. It's like he gets away with murder. He gets away with murder. It's like, you know, he's the kind of player. It's like when he's playing against you, you absolutely hate him, but if he's on your side. And, you know, I suppose thinking about, you know, those things that whether it's Tindall getting in people's ears or getting up people's noses or Joe Linton being physical, like Newcastle needed those things to kind of get through today, and they've not had enough of those things this season. They've not had enough of that sort of dark art stuff. And yeah, Joe Linton, you know, we again saw him, you know, getting under the skin of Brighton's players and being disruptive. And, you know, Newcastle needed that today. They needed people to fight. They had to fight for the shirt, for themselves, for the manager, you know, to get a win. And there've just been times when we've been talking about, you know, about them being meek, which is, it's unacceptable really for any team, but for an Eddie Howe Newcastle United team, it's so far away from what they have been. They had to fight for that win, and they got their win. You know, they had to win, and they got their win.
Yeah, and then after the match, Yasser Romain does a bit of a kickabout on the pitch again, like he usually does when on the pitch with the ball. He's in the team photo along with other members of PIF and Jamie Rubin, and minority owner who's here as well. And Howe spoke afterwards sort of about unity and about it. That he didn't speak too much to Al Romain in between him finishing the match and then coming to the press conference, but he said Al Romain did address the players and spoke about basically about again about the ambition of the club and where they're going to go to, and that you get energy from that and you felt the unity. It does because they were here, that does just magnify the importance of this win, doesn't it? I mean, it, for Eddie Howe, it was a huge win for Newcastle and just to end the negativity, but also just for the ownership to be here and for that. Whereas if there had been a defeat today, then I think that suddenly this week would have felt a lot more fraught, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all taking sort of huge symbolism from it, but I think that's right. Yeah. I mean, if they'd come here and witnessed a 10th Premier League defeat in 13. And, you know, the noise and the pressure and, you know, whatever, you know, might have happened inside the stadium, that would have been massive. And it was the opposite. And so we've talked to a lot of people or messaged a lot of people about these meetings this week. And everybody has come back and said the same sort of thing. Very positive. You know, why are you guys in the media getting all excited about it? It's like, well, surely you can understand. But, you know, there's been a lot of that. It's all been very positive. Constructive is a word that's been used. Good meetings, yeah, really nice, really good. But we need a win. We need a win. We need a win. And it's, you know, it's so crazy, really. But that is what a football club, all, you know, comes down to. We know it does. Like, you can be as ambitious as you want to be. You can have the biggest budget in the world. You can, you know, have plans for a new stadium, a new training ground, absolutely all of that. You need a win. You're ultimately, everything comes back down to what those 11 players or 15 players do on a Saturday afternoon. And everybody needed that. Like, Eddie Howe needed it to, like, say it's okay, him giving a presentation and saying, here's my plan, this is why we've got things badly wrong this season, but I'm still the man, this is my plan. Now if Newcastle then go out and lose again, there's no foundation for him. He had to have this foundation. Same for the players, same for everybody, really. So absolutely massive in the circumstances.
And I mean, you made this point just before recording that last week Eddie Howe has been asked about relegation, and now he's been asked after the press conference today about the back of the European picture.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you know, this is part of covering this absolutely batshit, beautiful, gorgeous, amazing, dysfunctional, you know, just brilliant football club. Literally, he's being asked about relegation and looking over his shoulder at Arsenal, and it's not a illegitimate question to be asked. Same thing this week, he's being asked about Europe. Dan Byrne was asked about Europe, and, you know, Dan said, you know, to his credit, he said, I think we'd have to win all of our remaining games. And
but Bruno Guimaraes just said that Newcastle's target has to be, and they have to win the last three games. He was asked on BBC, and that's what he said they should be doing.
Yeah, well, that's what this club is, and they should. I mean, like, nobody is shying away from the fact that the league performance, the league form, the league position is bad. It's poor. It's been poor all season. Their league position is nowhere near where they want to be. I'm an Eddie Howe fan. you know, like, I understand mitigation and I understand context and all things like that, but I'm also going to watch these games. I was at Palace and it wasn't good enough. Seeing, you know, home to Sunderland, home to Bournemouth, it's not good enough. Like, whatever the excuse is or whatever the explanations, it's not good enough. And those two things can be simultaneously true. And they needed a win. And I'm just going to repeat it. They got it, but they, yeah, absolutely needed to.
Yeah, and this has been quite a long podcast, but a lot of the post-match ones recently have been long and have been negative. So we felt that the need to reflect, A, how long the second half was, and maybe this podcast would be nearly as long as that felt.
But I hope also, it hasn't been quite as difficult to sit through. Maybe it has.
Yeah, maybe it has. But also, yeah, it does just feel huge in that small sense. And it's about backing it up now. It's about going to Nottingham Forest next week and making sure that this isn't just a sort of one-off win. They can't just go there and suddenly standards slip again. It's something, a base that's got to be built from. But at least there is a base now, whereas there hadn't been for a period of time.
It's absolutely massive. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to say they have to win every other game this season. I would like them to, and you would hope that, as you say, this gives them the opportunity to, or a platform to. We saw that there was life in the old dog today, and we want to see more of that. We've not had this feeling enough this season.
There we go. Finally, the run of defeats is broken and Newcastle take all 3 points. This team will be the death of me, I guarantee it. Thank you for listening to this matchday episode, and make sure you check out poddingthetime.supportandcast.fm to subscribe and listen to our Matt Finn Hall special. Thanks a lot to George and Chris again at St James's Park. We'll speak to you again very soon. Goodbye.
He has struggled mentally with that whole thing of challenging over 4 seasons. I mean, you know. Sorry. Damn it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.